Right. I refuse to pass this one by. On this day in 1989, the Tiananmen Square massacre took place. Known by the Chinese as the June the 4th incident, this was the quelling by lethal force of a student uprising in Beijing, although protesters had been mobilizing right across China and a state of martial law had been declared. The soldiers and tanks doing the quelling were elements of the so-called People's Liberation Army. The students were campaigning for things like freedom of speech, a free press, and democratic reform. Students and bystanders died by gunfire and/or beatings. To this day, no one can verify the death toll, but thousands is a word often bandied about. Remember that image of the man standing in front of those tanks? That happened the following day during the army's mopping up process. Nobody can verify what happened to him and the others like him either. And we were all shocked and appalled when it was reported. After a few months, we tut-tutted about it. Now it's history, an entry in the archives. Meanwhile, international trade must continue, mustn't it? And new deals must be struck in the Far East, mustn't they? So we mustn't be beastly to the Chinese by, for example, getting cross about the origins of COVID-19, must we? Well, I'm game. Hello, and welcome to Cromford's Assortment on Thursday, the 4th of June, 2020. On this day, the 4th of June in 1783, Jacques-Joseph Montgolfier demonstrated the first public flight of a hot air balloon. No, I said a hot air balloon. In a 10-minute flight, the balloon reached an approximate height of 6,000 feet, but there was no one aboard, so no high-altitude cries of "Hurrah!" or "Sacré vache!" or even "Oh, merde!" On this day in 1784, Elisabeth Thible became the first woman to fly in a hot air balloon. No, a hot air balloon. According to her Wikipedia page, she did it in fancy dress, and she and her companion on the flight sang duets from a popular opera of the time. I hope at least one of the songs went like, "Here we go, here we go, here we go." On this day in 1879, the English children's book illustrator Mabel Lucy Atwell was born. These days, you'd run a mile from the sort of children in her illustrations. Cute and winsome in a sinister, midwitch cuckoo sort of way, and usually pot-bellied. Were they keeping KFC in business or something? On this day in 1913, Winnie the Pooh creator A.A. Milne married Dorothy de Selincourt. His wedding gift to her was a cleaned-out honey jar. Hers to him was a burst red balloon. Yes, that sort of balloon. The fun they had on honeymoon is nobody's business. On this day in 1934, Dr. Frederick Banting was knighted in recognition of his pioneering work on the isolation and extraction of insulin. I don't know what sort of posthumous recognition all the dogs, pigs and cattle he experimented on would have gained. On this day in 1970, Tonga gained its full independence from the United Kingdom after 70 years of being a protected state. Yay! Go Tonga! Nobody can tell you what to do with your nuclear arsenal. On this day in 1984, the DNA of the quagga, an extinct member of the zebra family, was extracted from muscle tissue of a museum specimen. Oh great, probably in a few more years we could have herds of them that we can hunt to extinction again. And finally, the 4th of June is National Cheese Day in the US. But don't get too excited. American cheese isn't exactly your feisty bit of mature cheddar. More like edible magnolia paint. In other news, Cromford's assortment has been taken up for broadcast by Ferring Radio down in West Sussex. They'll be getting a slightly edited version of these programmes, which means a bit of extra work for me, but hey, it's syndication of a sort, isn't it? Woohoo! So, because of the extra fiddling about I needed to do last weekend, I've given myself a fairly easy programme to present to you this week. Basically, it's all music, none of it mine, apart from the usual opening and closing and incidental stuff. If you're very lucky in this life, you'll occasionally hear a piece of music for the first time that changes everything for you. The way you see the world, the way you see yourself, everything. I've made a list of 10 of these big musical moments in my life, and I'd like to share them with you now. See if any of them overlap with your big moments.
1.
4 years old I was when this record came out. Before it, my favourite sounds were probably the ice cream van and my nan's voice when she spoke to me. And then I heard She Loves You by the Beatles, and suddenly, ka-ching, pop music had arrived. Nobody had ever heard anything like that song. It seems quaint now, but back then it drove, it moved, right from the first millisecond. Here's the essence of the record, if that's all you need. On the other hand, if you've got another 2 minutes to spare, here it is properly. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, 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 yeah.
You think you've lost your love? Well, I saw her yesterday, yeah. It's you she's thinking of, and she told me what to say, yeah. She said she loves you. You know you should be glad. With a love like that, you know you should be glad.
Like most blokes, I've often been accused of not having a romantic bone in my body. But when I was 10 or 11, my parents had a favourite album by Burt Bacharach, and it was full of complicated, yearning melodies like this one, from the Bacharach David stage show, Promises, Promises, whoever you are, I love you. And if you think an unromantic person could be sent by this sort of thing, think again. Classical music for an average 12-year-old. Oh, snoozeville. Tumty-tum music, isn't it? Portraits of mad-haired blokes with camp shirt fronts and Mungo Jerry sideburns. Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven. Oh, dear. Can't I watch Scooby-Doo instead? But then my music teacher played me this one afternoon, and I got a shiver down the spine. BBC Television used this piece for their Quatermass science fiction series in the 1950s, and it fitted perfectly. Tense, dark and dissonant. Streets ahead of anything else in music when it was premiered as part of the Planets suite in 1918. It still sounds edgy. This is the finale of Gustav Holst's Mars, the Bringer of War. Actually, I'll just take testosterone like the dwarfs were obviously drinking in the Hobbit trilogy and say that again. Mars, the bringer of war.
4.
Here's a chilling thought. When I was 13, Noel Edmonds was considered a cool dude. His Sunday show on Radio 1 was required listening in the early 70s, if you were too young to stay up for John Peel, and I first heard the next track when Edmonds was using it as continuity music, of all things. Some listener wrote to him and asked what it was, so he played it in full and identified it. It was called Sylvia, and so began my lifelong adoration of Focus. Tubular Bells was Mike Oldfield's Frankenstein monster. For one thing, it was stitched together from hundreds of little parts and took on a life of its own. And for another, it seems to have haunted Oldfield ever since, if the number of his remixes, re-recordings and reinterpretations is any guide. All I know is that it was the most bizarrely compelling thing I'd ever heard. I mean, listen, it does this, and just this, for ages. And then it does something else, and just that something else, forever, and so on. The bit I'm going to play is the first bit I ever heard, channel hopping on a slow night in early 1974. Sounded like Son of Albatross to me, and still does. Thank you. If you've only ever thought of Genesis as Phil Collins' po-faced other career, you will have missed a lot of very attractive and intriguing music. I got into them in 1978 when a friend played me the And Then There Were Three album, but it took some weaning. Their earliest albums on Charisma were demanding. You had to sit and pay attention for several plays before the songs started to work their spell. Here's the opening and title track of their 1974 masterpiece, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Get a load of those vocal timbres. Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins in harmony on the chorus.
Right. Lucy is gone. He's forgotten what he did, and the land lies down.
Seven. Here's another bunch you had to seriously listen to instead of boogieing. Yes. The song Earth Falls Away on my Fly You Fool album is a pretty obvious attempt to emulate this next track. Well, come on. It's got a church organ the size of the Devil's Tower, with a cracking rock band ensemble rolling it along. How could I not have a go? Parallels. Like most people at the end of the 70s, I loved what the Police were doing on their singles. All that air between the instruments, all that chorus effect on the guitar. But then I found that I preferred Stuart Copeland's contributions to the albums to those of Sting. The lyrics were less up themselves for a start. The next song is on their second album, and it's my favourite track out of everything on the first three albums. Does Everyone Stare?
I change my clothes 10 times before I tell you on a date. I'm in a cold sweat, my panic makes me look. I know you never meant for this, I know. My shots will always miss, I know. My shots will always miss. Does everyone stare this way at you? I only look this way at you.
I can divide my sandwich year from university into two periods, before and after I first heard the Waterboys. Mike Scott is another bloke with serious lyric welly. How could you not be affected by anything on A Pagan Place or This Is the Sea? Here, from This Is the Sea, is, of course, The Whole of the Moon.
Flashes.
As you head for middle age, you start to assume that music won't have the same gut-grabbing effect on you that it used to have. It's as if your impressibility muscle starts to go to fat. That's what I was thinking in 1997 while I was browsing in a department store in Stockholm. And then an album came on the PA. Kapow! It seems there was one more light bulb moment to be had. The songs seemed retro in a Beatlesque way, but with mature lyrics and a very modern production sound. The album turned out to be Delamitri's latest, Some Other Sucker's Parade, and this track was the one that had me pleading at the desk if I could sell my soul for a copy of the CD. This is Won't Make It Better. And that's the lot. They are my big ten. How many did you, or could you, latch on to? And that wraps up the programme for this week. Next week's programme will be much more the usual mishmash, so look out for it, Thursday the 11th of June. In the meantime, keep it together. Stay sane, safe and well. I made this programme for you, and I'm going to be here sending them out as long as you are there to receive them. And you are there to receive them, aren't you? Bye for now. Cromford's assortment was conceived, assembled and presented by me, Paul Cromford. I don't own any of the songs or instrumental tracks I played in this programme, apart from the opening music, the closing music and all those little incidental instrumental stings that you've got so used to over the weeks. This was a Paul Cromford production, specifically for you.